back in 2004, 2005, there emerged, I think it's fair to say, a strong Haiti solidarity movement in Canada. With the election of René Préval earlier this year, it seems that perspectives have changed a little bit. On the one hand, people have argued that the victory of René Préval was a victory for the Haitian people insofar as they overcame intimidation and a lot of brutality and repression in order to exercise that choice. But on the other hand, the people that were for the coup, the Canadian government and other governments, also took some credit for Préval coming into power. So how do we make sense of this election of René Préval earlier this year?
Well, yes, it's a mixed victory for the people because Préval was not the choice of the United States government and its allies that organized and orchestrated the coup, covered it up with the United Nations and established a repressive system to keep the people down so that they would have minimal access to the electoral system. René Préval, as you would recall, came in the competition at the last minute, and there was even an attempt to steal the election from him at the level of the presidential seat with the ballots that were thrown away, etc. And with a lot of pressure from the people in the streets, eventually they gave in and let him be president. But that's a partial victory because, of course, the system includes much more than a president. And whereas René Préval was probably elected with 60 to 70% of the votes, Jean-Bertrand Aristide was elected with 90% of the vote, was still overthrown by the local elite and its international allies. So the situation is that a president or even a very popular party in Haiti that has popular backup is not sufficient to take the country to the road of progress because the opposition or the enemy has a lot of other leverages that it can use to control the state or to destroy the state if that is their aim. And as we can see, as soon as Préval became president, the attitude of governments of the United States, Canada, France, they all took a very defensive position. First, the prime minister that René Préval had chosen, Mr. Jacques-Édouard Alexis, was put on a list, and for the longest time, this became a diplomatic brawl between Canada and Haiti, as the new Harper government came into power, and you had a situation whereas when we had an illegal government, a government that came out of a coup, you had full embrace by the Canadian government, even visit by the prime minister, which is unprecedented, which happened only once in our 200 years of history in Haiti. And when we have the legal government of Préval, the attitude is one of confrontation, and the latest one being that the government of the United States has decided now that they're going to deport over 100 Haitians that they consider to be illegal, and some of them have criminal records, to Haiti per month, a country that already has problems establishing a police system that works impartially. A situation where you have a wave of kidnapping, not unlike what you see currently in also occupied Iraq and Afghanistan. So there seems to be a desire to destabilize the Préval government. And, of course, all of the so-called aid that we saw, conferences after conferences announcing for Haiti, have not materialized. Not even 10% of all this talk of money that you hear all the time from Department of Foreign Affairs and U.S. and none of that money has gone to Haiti, except for money that goes, of course, to support the opposition through NGOs and other groups like that.
Jean, before moving on to some other topics, I want to stay on this topic around the election and looking back at the past year. And I want to draw your attention to a letter that I'm sure you're familiar with. It was a letter, an open letter, written by Rights and Democracy and the Consultation pour Haïti on January 27th. It was written to Kofi Annan and Alan Rock, concerned about the climate of insecurity and the mandate of MINUSTAH, the UN mission in Haiti, and asking essentially that armed gangs be disarmed. Many in the Haitian Solidarity Movement saw this as essentially Canadian-based NGOs asking the UN to go in and attack popular organizations. Can you just share with us your perspective on this letter and your perspective in general about the role of NGOs such as Rights and Democracy and others that are part of the Consultation pour Haïti in Canada?
Yes, and we need to go back to the role that they have played before, during the coup. This Concertation pour Haïti, which includes a lot of Canadian government-funded NGOs that include Oxfam Quebec, where you have some of the top people went on TV here in Canada asking for the Haitian president to step down, basically calling for the coup. Before it happened, has consistently played the role of broker for the Haitian minority. People need to understand that what's happening in Haiti is not just a matter of political conflict between political parties. There is a class struggle going on in Haiti, and the majority of the population had always been kept outside of the political life until we had revolt that kicked baby Doc Duvalier out of the country, and the movement, the large Lavalas movement, which eventually won power in 1990 with the election of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Now, in the last decades, what we've seen is a situation where the military was used to topple Jean-Bertrand Aristide and reinstate a military dictatorship that caters to the wealthy elite in Haiti, maybe basically a few tens of families that control the Haitian economy, and added to that another parasite group, which is the professional politicians who basically have political parties that never gain any popularity but have good connections either through the European Union, those like Fusion and the Socialist group, and those that are right-wing and connected to the United States government, as well as what I call the modern missionaries, the NGOs that prey on the poverty of Haiti to collect a lot of money from CEDA and Alliance Française, etc. And they usually have a front orphanage in the country, and they do a little bit of work here and there. But really, their essential work is really to bolster political aspirations of foreign countries in Haiti. So these NGOs form part of a class, and all these people inside of Haiti, although some of them, like Alternative, might have left-sounding rhetoric when they are in Canada, but inside of Haiti, these people live in the same neighborhoods. Their kids go to the same school as the U.S. ambassador, and they live in the same neighborhoods. And they look at people who live in Cité Soleil, in the popular neighborhoods like Cafoufei, and Matissa, etc., as their enemy, although they make their money on the basis of the poverty of these people. And so what you see is the emergence of racist terminology, such as chimère, which they use to identify young men in the popular neighborhoods that decided to resist against first the thugs that the CIA had armed from the Dominican Republic to come and topple the government, and also who resist the presence of the United Nations forces inside of Haiti. And so there's a lot of class and race prejudice associated with that, and I insist on that also because one of the characteristics of the so-called Haitian elite is the fact that there's also a pigmentation type of segregation in Haiti. You move from Cité Soleil to the top of the mountains of Haiti, and people are changing in shade. getting lighter all the time. And when you get all the way at the top of the mountain, you would think that you're in a different country. And so, and these people intermarry among themselves. If you just take an example of the guy who was head of the Group 184, André Appéd, who is also head of owner of a number of sweatshops that he inherited from his father, André Appéd Sr. He is the brother-in-law of the number two of Group 184, Charles Baker, who was also a presidential candidate, and connected with another one of those families that control either the import of oil or rice in Haiti, etc. So you have the situation where you have a situation of apartheid in Haiti. And those people, such as Reginald Boulos, another one of those families that control the economy in Haiti and that are well connected with the Washington band, basically were pressuring the United Nations to basically go and just wipe out Cité Soleil. And one of use their tanks as the former army used to do, and did during the first coup in 1991, basically put Uzis and AK-47s on tripod and indiscriminately just blast people, kill people, massacres in Cité Soleil. And that's what they were pressuring the general, the Brazilian general, to do in early 2005, Mr. Bacella. And as you may recall, after a heated discussion with these people, the next day they found the general dead at Hotel Montana. Of course, the United Nations was supposed to do an investigation on that. There's supposed to be reports. We've never seen any report. No more than we've seen about the Canadian soldier, RCMP soldier that got killed in Haiti, Mark Book. And the only thing we heard was a leak that some of the people that killed Mark Book were linked to the gang led by Labanier, which we know from the study from the Miami School of Law was under the pay of André Appéd, one of the sweatshop kingpins that I told you earlier about, who was head of the group of 184 that the CIA and the International Republican Institute had financed to topple Jean-Bertrand Aristide. So you have this class struggle going on, and the NGOs that are connected, that are receiving a lot of money from Alliance Française, the European Union, well, these groups are part and parcel of this class conflict in Haiti. And, of course, we have a situation where kidnappings have become an industry in Haiti. There's been a wave of kidnappings that we've never seen in the country, never. Not even under the worst periods of the military dictatorships have we had so many kidnappings taking place in Haiti. And although the kidnappings are taking place all over Port-au-Prince, even in the rich neighborhoods, although people from all classes have been victims, although the people that have been arrested, caught red-handed, involved in kidnappings, involve people in the rich neighborhoods, some of them from known rich families, what we see happen is that these young people, a particular case of one of these young people from a very well-known rich family in Haiti named Coles, they put him on a plane and made him leave the country, never judge. We have the head of the judicial police, Michael Lucius, who was accused and called to justice by a judge in Haiti, Napla Sentil. What we saw is that, in fact, they decided to just remove the judge from the case instead of judging this guy and finding whether, based on the evidence, he's guilty or innocent. That's not what we're seeing. This is important for Canadians to pay attention to, because all of this is happening at a time where Canada is still taking credit for helping, modernize the Haitian judicial system and police. And the head of the police himself is admitting that at least one-third of the police officers are involved in crime, including kidnappings. But however, although you see all of these indications that kidnapping being such a sophisticated thing, you don't just wake up one day and live in a very poor neighborhood and decide you're going to kidnap people, because it requires equipment, it requires knowledge of bank accounts, because some of these people that are kidnapped who speak afterwards explain how their kidnappers knew exactly how much money they had in the bank, revealing that these people have inside people who work for them in the banks. This is not people who live in the poor neighborhoods in Haiti. People who live in the poor neighborhoods don't have that kind of access to information. So obviously, if there are complicity in the poor neighborhoods, if sometimes people are kidnapped and taken in the poor neighborhoods, it is obvious that the masterminds are not poor neighborhoods, and the people who are making the money are certainly not living in the poor neighborhoods, because if they were collecting on, I don't think those criminals would still be living in poverty if they used to be poor before. So obviously, this is a situation where they are using the poverty of these people, and crime exists also among the poor. The poor are not angels. There are gangs in the poor neighborhoods that are armed by criminals in the police force, criminals in the elite, in the middle class, criminals everywhere who are taking advantage of the fact that there is a total collapse of the Haitian state as a result of the racist and imperialist coup that was conducted with complicity of the United States, France, and Canada. So, unfortunately, instead of helping the Préval government to fight against this wave of kidnappings intelligently, targeting the culprits from wherever sector they come from, what we are seeing is a concerted effort by people such like the Table de Concertation to politicize the issue and target the militants who live in Cité Soleil and who are still calling for the return of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, as if it was these people who were behind the kidnappings.
Jean, you've referred to the similar kidnapping waves in Iraq and in Afghanistan. So I'm wondering if you could share with our listeners your more general conclusion about the use of kidnapping in those situations, all situations of occupation or quasi-occupation.
Yes, I mean, my final analysis on this is that these things are not happening in a vacuum or by coincidence. The overall aim is to quash our resistance. And usually the resistance would come from the working class and mostly the middle class. And by creating the situation of mass hysteria in those countries, what you see is that the people who can afford to leave the country eventually leave. And what you are left with is the totally impoverished or those who are corrupted by the occupying forces. So that way it makes it easier for the imperialist forces to implement their policy. You know, it's nothing new. The imperialist forces, when they were colonizing other people's lands in the 19th and 20th century, it was always the three M's: the military, the missionaries, and then the merchants. So the military shows up with their guns, and then they send the missionaries as spies to try to subdue the people and make them stay quiet with the promise that everything will be all right, either with Jesus or all kinds of other stuff that they use to subdue people. And then the business people show up, the merchants, because the land has been cleared of all competition. So what I suspect is happening right now is that they're pushing for a return of the military in Haiti, the military that was disbanded by Jean-Bertrand Aristide, because every Haitian recognized that this was not a Haitian army, but the CIA's army in Haiti. Because just like a lot of these armies in Latin America, trained at Fort Benning and Fort Bragg in the United States, always understood that their only enemy was the Haitian people. So that's part of the military part. The missionaries, the NGOs, basically the modern missionaries, are there to confuse the issue, to make people in the imperialist countries think that they're actually doing good to these people, you know, build a little rickety school here, a little, you know, health clinic there. and at the time strangulating the government of that. They are paying debt to the IDB, the IMF, and et cetera. So therefore, the state can never have enough money to itself invest in education, in healthcare, in infrastructure in any meaningful way. So you have a lot of little dirt roads in Haiti that Oxfam and, you know, and all these other international Santa Clauses who are managing misery and profiting from it. And then you have, you know, the merchants, the multinational corporations. As we speak this week, they approve something called a HOPE bill in the United States so that sweatshops in Haiti will be able to produce shirts that enter into the United States duty-free if the raw material comes from the United States. In other words, basically just use Haiti as a modern plantation. As you know, when we talk about the so-called elite in Haiti and they try to sell Haiti out there to corporations, the only comparative advantage that's always offered up as number one is that we have a cheap labor force, which is a code word to say that we have a quasi-slavery system in Haiti where these women would be working from sunrise to sundown in those factories and never have any opportunity to have the next generation move to a different lifestyle. That is, generation after generation, these people will be working in factories for a class of people who refuse to invest in the future of the country other than doing their money through import of food and the running of sweatshops, which become a slave system, a quasi-slave system. So, you know, this is what's happening. This kidnapping, this wave of kidnapping, whether it is in Iraq, in Afghanistan, or in Haiti, has for purpose to push away the middle class, the skilled workers, and therefore make it easier to control whatever resistance might have existed in those countries.